All right, so where were you on the night of August 21?
Let's see, I was home by myself.
What about September 11th?
Oh, my birthday! I was home alone.
September 28th?
I was watching Home Alone at home alone.
Sir, I gotta tell you, based on your lack of alibi and your various connections to the victims, you are currently a person of interest.
So let me get this straight. You think that I am interesting and also a person?
TBTL!
It's the biggest helicopter leasing event in the Western Hemisphere since 1997.
I'm doing the work. I'm baby stepping. I'm not a slacker.
What's the symbology there?
Symbology? I'm sure the word you were looking for was symbolism. What is the symbolism there?
Either I had a bottle of vodka or he had a bottle of vodka, but anyway, we were drinking vodka, and I was so happy that I found someone who would drink vodka with me, you know.
Okay, are we done with the business part? I wanted to start the clown portion of the meeting.
Get in here, dude. Come on. You know what time it is.
Hi, everybody. I gotta beg the dog to come in here and hang out. Like, where does she have to be on a Wednesday morning? Other than right here, right now, hanging out with us on TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live. My name's Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Oh, hey, y'all said my name.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. I don't know why it's that important to me that I get the pod dog in here to just, like, observe the show.
That's just absolute stupidity.
But it does emotionally bother me when she chooses to be in the living room where nothing is happening, when here in the broadcast center, everything is happening.
I'll say, what's up, dog?
All right, so we got that squared away. Let's tell you about episode 2581 in a collector series.
Jalapeno!
By which I mean,
let the fun begin.
A couple of interesting stories to get to, including some skyjinks. A plane had to land, apparently, because of a fight that broke out. The people were apparently fighting over something that happened.
The word was F-A-R-T.
I don't know, though. This seems like fake news to me.
I'd like to point out to anybody watching, this is really bunk journalism.
But I do want to talk about it, because it's making the rounds, and lots of people are sending it to us, including a very highly placed, unpaid bidet correspondent of the show. So we will talk about it. And also, we'll talk about this other story that really seems to throw everything I thought I knew about health into question. Because one of the things it says is that the key to living over 90 is to actually consume a couple of drinks every day, a couple of alcohol drinks.
Well, they're trying to say I was drunk. I drank 8 beers yesterday. That was all I drank.
That guy lived to be 230, by the way. And then another thing. So they're saying if you drink a couple drinks, you're going to live past 90. At least it improved by 18% someone's chances. And there was another thing that improved your chances of living past 90 that I'm assiduously trying to avoid. So we'll tell you about the latest research on that. We'll tell you about all of that right after we say hello to this guy, the longest running Cobro of the program, known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace, and their splendor. He dominates the foe left and right. It's never too early for him to have a fish sandwich or really to buy a hot air balloon. And not only does he dominate the foe, he dominates the flow.
As Jay would say, he's got flow.
He's Andrew Walsh, and he joins us now from the Wallingford neighborhood, Seattle, Washington. Hello, my dude.
Hello, Luke. we got to get something out of the way. Ooh, right at the top
nice,
here.
Rooster.
Clearing it out.
Strong rooster crow game at the beginning.
Well, like you say, it is the crack of 10:43 in the morning. My God.
Shh. Let's make the listeners think this is happening at like 7:30 a.m.
Man, if you, to those who've never set the alarm and gotten up at this time before, you should. I recommend it. It is a God. Beautiful time of the day. And just to think, mm-hmm, like everybody's just asleep right
dawn
now.
Dawn is just breaking over the hillside out just, my window.
It makes me sad to think that so many people just sleep through this and never get to experience it. I just want to get something out of the way at the beginning because immediately, okay. immediately after the show yesterday, I hit myself in the head with the heel of my hand because I realized something that we talked about and that I kind of inadvertently really stepped in it by omission. I stepped in it by omission, which I think is a thing. I played a song for you. I'm actually going to play it here now if I can. Coming back from a break, I believe I played this song, right? To which you said, what?
Is that Dirty Projectors?
That's
because
right.
It sounded very much like the sounds of Dave Longstreth and his guitar plucking and the kind of, you know, harmonies that they tend to use for that band.
Now, I did not laugh at you and say, oh,
you did not.
Luke, my ignorant little friend. I thought it.
No.
No.
Yeah,
No, I was just like, no, that's Solange. Solange Knowles. I've had that for a really long time. And then you were like kind of embarrassed. You're like, oh, my God, it was like a real soul song. And I thought it was like this whitey indie band. And you were a little embarrassed
right.
about that.
A lot embarrassed.
Yeah. And then I don't know why. At the end of the show, I do just a tiny little bit of cleanup. I was going to insert the ads right there, right before that song. And I'm listening to it. I'm like, oh, wait. Yeah, that's a Dirty Projectors song. It takes them a little bit longer to ramp up to it. I'm learning
well, yeah.
now. Like, I didn't look this up. Nobody emailed me about it. It just struck me. I remember this very well. I knew the Dirty Projectors version first. It's their song. Solange was covering it. I think I even made a mixtape one time that had both versions on it. Yet I
Ooh,
let you
got
just
it, yeah.
squirm there and feel
no,
like
but,
a fool because see, you thought correctly that this was a Dirty Projectors song.
That's the beauty of this show, though, Andrew, is that we were able to take that mildly confused moment and then have a 20 to 30 minute conversation about what I didn't like about the show Big Little Lies.
That is true. It was a gateway into Big Little Lies talk.
Yes. And ultimately, I got to feel very cool and down.
Smarty pants dance, smarty pants dance.
So everybody won except you.
Anyway, I apologize. That was really embarrassing. As a matter of fact, I thought for sure, and I wonder if this is just a delay in people, you know, maybe listening a couple of days behind, because this is right up our listeners' alley. Like, I am expecting a deluge of emails from people.
Well, I will, at the risk of name dropping and also at slightly busting him on what his post-television show ritual is, at about 7 o'clock local time last night, I got a text from our friend Chris Hayes. He goes, I'm sure you know this already, but that was Solange. And then it goes into all caps. Covering Dirty Projectors
oh.
still misses the move. So you were right, all caps. And then I texted him a screenshot of you and me texting about it because you, as you mentioned, realized the true history of the song like a minute after you posted the show. I said this was Andrew realizing it 3 minutes after the show. And then Hayes says, that's all I could think of as I was listening was millions of people emailing you. And I said, yeah, the good news is we have tomorrow's show covered. Just listening to Andrew beat himself up over that. Oh, and the fart plane incident. And then Hayes says, that's a solid rundown.
Yeah. By the way, and he brought us that story, which you are going to just yeah. savage, it sounds like, later
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely.
So I'm really looking forward to
I'm
that.
I'm just going to give it my best Dave Folkenflik treatment.
Oh, nice.
I'm going to. Yeah.
Well, can you add, like, what would be a good, like, if it was Folkenflik mixed with, who's a real, like, angry hot talker? Because, like, that's the show I want to listen to.
Alex Jones?
Yes. What about that? Like, kind of Alex Jones-style presentation.
How about Dave Folkenjones?
Dave Folkenjones. I like this character, and I might even listen to
yeah.
that.
What? Let's see. So, Dave, let's do this. Let's make this interesting to even fewer people because they probably don't have a real frame of reference. Well, they have a frame of reference for Alex Jones, sadly. But it'd be like if Alex Jones was really covering the Rupert Murdoch empire
mm-hmm.
and also what happened with Roger Ailes. See, the problem is these are actually topics that might come up for Alex Jones, but with a completely different take. See, this character, the problem with this character of Dave Fulcon Jones is that we need someone who doesn't, whose topics of sort of areas of emphasis are wildly different than what Alex Jones would talk mm-hmm. about.
How about
but no,
go ahead.
No, I'm listening. I'm
well,
on
like
Tinder
what
hooks.
Like what about like some like Alex Jones, probably the real Alex Jones, not Alex Fulcon Jones. Is that what he's saying? Mm-hmm.
David Fulcon Jones.
David Fulcon Jones. Like would he be into like, I don't know, the new ownership of the LA Times or the LA Weekly for that matter, or issues.
But see, that's
of,
the problem is because Alex Fulcon Jones would just be like, the LA Times under Trunk is a false flag newspaper. But see, you have to be, so here's how it has to work. You have to be Audie Cornish interviewing me about something that happened in the media, but then I just, as David Fulcon Jones, I just yell that it's false flag.
I am an editor.
These are actors hired to pretend like they are editors at the New York Times.
Here's the deal, though. I mean, I know that this is not good riffing. I will cut this all out and just replace it with that's not an insult on you. That's me digging deeper into this somewhat failed project. But what if instead?
Ooh, somewhat is a compliment.
What if instead of David Fulcon Jones also inhabiting the kind of worldview. I don't want him to take the worldview of Alex Jones, just the presentation, just the yelling, the barking,
the yelling,
the energy.
That's what we take.
But
right. Okay.
He keeps the level-headed analysis mm-hmm. of your David Fulcon flicks.
Okay. So let's just think like, okay. So what would a topic be? Give me a topic for David Fulcon Jones.
Okay. So I'll be Audie then. This is tough. I'm not good at this stuff. Okay.
Wait, you have the easiest job.
I know. But you're
better
than
like
me.
A competent news interviewer. That's not true. I just know more about dirty projectors than you do.
Okay. Some are calling the new ownership of the LA Weekly the Vici LA Weekly, and are boycotting and trying to get the sales to go down for this newspaper. How is the new ownership reacting?
Audie, my sources tell me that this is just part of the changing media landscape. Local papers are having a difficult time attracting the advertising that they used to get because of the fragmentation.
So does this go back to Craigslist? That was fantastic. No, I think you really pulled the nose up on that, and I appreciate it.
Had I not burst a vein in my neck, I was going to go into talking about some kind of vitamin program, which would have swung wildly back into actual Alex Jones territory. Whew, that really takes it out of you.
Yeah, no kidding. It's a real workout, huh?
I want to let everyone know that I'm overcoming the odds today, and I'm a real, I would say, I'm an inspirational story of doing this podcast, even though my computer that I use to play sound effects and the like is, well, I don't think it's long for this world, Andrew. Mm. Starting yesterday, when I would type anything into like a search engine or try to compose an email, it would just freeze up and I'd have to totally restart it. And then right before the show, it died again, and I restarted it, and I noticed that it would let me play audio drops at least. But then while we were – so that was like – I was like, that's all I'm going to do with this computer, play things like, you know, this.
Well, that's a pretty good spoof.
So that still worked. But then while you and I were talking and I was trying to look up an audio drop, a specific audio drop, it involved typing that into the search bar on iTunes, and it once again froze up the computer. And now I think the computer is actually just going to freeze up intermittently every 4 to 5 minutes, and I'll have to keep restarting it. So if there's a moment where like something is brought up and it like calls for the perfect drop,
mm-hmm.
and you as a longtime TBTL listener know that I've got some perfect drop, like, you know, you've heard something and you're like, oh, this would be a great place for that. If I don't play it, it's because of the computer, as opposed to a normal show where I don't play it because I don't have my crap together.
Right,
this one is usually it's operator error. This one is going to actually be hardware related.
Okay, that sounds good. Now, I mean, I guess if you want, if you're thinking of a drop, Luke, that isn't there, you could just do your imitation of it, or I could try to do an imitation of it if I know which one you're looking for. I don't know if that's going
to
help.
Do I have to do the imitation as David Fulkin Jones?
They trying to say I was drunk. I had 8 beers. That's all. I'm a pioneer. I'm an explorer.
God. So awful.
Oh, dear God. All right, let's do this. Quick break. I'm going to let my my tired veins in my neck take a moment off and recover and bounce back. I'm going to try to soothe Rudy and explain to her what just happened. And then we'll come back. Oh. We'll do top stories. We'll do some emails and V-mails. It's not every day she hears a Fulkin Jones impression.
Is she giving you a look like, what's going on? Is she worried? Is her brow furrowed?
She. I'll tell you what. She does look a little confused, but I think in somewhere in the back of her mind is like asking what is for her the eternal question, is this leading in the direction of food? She's like, is this the new thing that he does before he gives me something? By the way, I just got a text from my wife. I endangered the whole broadcast by checking this text message on the computer because it could crash the whole operation. Text from my wife. That's my wife. It's like a kind of it's a concerned face emoji, and it just says, "I'm starting to get concerned." She's just hearing me down the hall, Fulkin Jonesing. Yeah, exactly. So it's another sign that I need to end it with this hilarious new improv character that I'm working on. Can you imagine if you took that out to the kind of alt comedy scene?
I would.
And that was your character. Alex or David Fulkin Jones. You're like, okay, this is David Fulkin Flick from NPR and Alex Jones from Being Alex Jones.
What if? Go with me here. What if?
Do you guys like impressions? Do you guys like impressions?
Stop me if you've heard this one.
All right, back in a moment. I knew you were going to do this.
Of course.
And I'm happy about it. I am happy about it. You ready for a scorch take?
Yeah.
I'll take the Solange version. Sorry.
Oh, Christ, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, this is good. I'm not anti Dirty Projectors at all. In fact, I appreciate a lot of their music, but I think that Solange version is just like way, way better.
Yeah, yeah. And not that I dislike that. I have that album. You wouldn't know it, but I do have that Dirty Projectors album. But yeah, I stumbled on the Solange one forever ago, and that's and I love it so much that it eclipsed the knowledge of the original.
Let's quickly.
Ooh, I like this too.
Oh yeah, this is
Stan Fulkin gets.
This is. I'll retire the joke I was going to make because Stan Fulkin gets also definitely the show title today. Stan, I'll write it down. Fulkin. I'm really glad that Dave Fulkin Flick doesn't know about this show. Not because he'd be offended. And in fact, if I can just say, he and I are dear, dear friends. But I don't want him. I don't want someone to forward this to him because then he's got a family. He's got an important job at NPR. He doesn't need to be digging through, you know, 18 minutes of TBTL to hear us making weird characters based on his reporting and his name. So, but Stan Fulkin gets is definitely going to be the show title if I have a vote in this thing.
I feel similar with Alex Jones. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm a dear friend, but you know, we see each other on occasion, and I don't want him to have to be getting all these notes from listeners. Hey,
what
you were mentioned
you
on TBTL again.
What do you think his take on TBTL would be? And I'm not asking for an impression here. This is not trying to get anyone to scream. I'm just wondering what his, like, what he would make of this show.
I think he just would think he would just group us in with a bunch of jackass podcasters. You know, like, I just see him as probably somebody who just, like, he lives in his world. He comes from that, you know, kind of big blowtorch radio
medium. But he actually doesn't. Well, he didn't always. I mean, I think he might have. I wouldn't say he'd have an appreciation for this show, but as opposed to a Rush Limbaugh type, I think he would actually have a little bit more interest in podcasting because he started, and why we're turning this into a Alex Jones Behind the Music, which is also a decent show title. I believe he started just with his wingnut wacko, I think actually really, to be honest with you, Destructive for America stuff. He started that as an internet TV show.
Oh, okay. InfoWars. All right. Oh, right. InfoWars was, yeah. All right.
Yeah, that's him. And that's and he started it as, I think, like a show that was like on YouTube or just on the web. And it grew in popularity because there's a lot of hurting people out there, Andrew. And the world is a confusing place. And they see things and they don't understand them. And whereas when you and I don't understand them, we just take a guess and say it's dirty projectors.
Sure.
I've been thinking about this because some people that I know, one guy one time,
is a young given guy, to posting, a young cool guy.
Yeah, exactly. Tends to be given to posting the kind of Jones level conspiracy business on the internet.
Ugh.
And it bums me out because this person that I know is a darling human. And they're really great.
I think this is somebody that I stopped following a while back because of that.
Maybe, no, possibly.
Maybe, yeah.
And so I've given a lot of thought to what's the draw for thinking that, you know, after some horrible tragedy like we've seen in Florida, what's the draw to thinking they might be paid actors? Like, how does that serve someone and their worldview or whatever other terrible theory is being peddled by an Alex Jones type? And what I think it is that the world is a super confusing place for all of us. And there are lots of things that don't make sense and we don't know why they happen. But the conspiracy, it gives an explanation for things. And once you start believing one of them, you can kind of go down a rabbit hole with it. And it's a need to understand why the world works the way it works. I think it actually tends to be a lot of people that have an engineering mind, a kind of mind that can problems. The person that I'm thinking of is a really good problem solver when it comes to a certain kind of industry. I know I'm being vague, but it's for good reason. But it's like I think people who are actually kind of good at figuring things out in other parts of their life can get caught up in that world because it is an explanation. It's a wrong explanation, but it is, in fact, an explanation
for
why things happen.
Don't you think it's also just an extreme example of like a kind of confirmation bias that we all fall prey to as well? I mean, none of us are.
Well, I think once it starts, then it all kind of plays together. So once you think one conspiracy theory is true, like I'm not talking about like what's a conspiracy theory that's not like. Like damaging. What's a non-damaging conspiracy theory?
I don't know. Something involving the druids?
Sure. When I think like the damaging ones are like, well, actually, I kind of think they're all sort of damaging. Like if you don't think we landed on the moon, for instance, that seems fairly innocuous. Like who cares? I think we landed on the moon. It's like some people are like, well, but what about that flag? There's no wind in space or whatever. I guess the reason I think thinking we didn't land on the moon is damaging is because it then if you think that the U.S. government faked that, then there's no end to what they would fake. And then it's like you can't believe anything that's being said. And then it starts to really unravel.
Yes. And that's a lot of the conspiracy theories. I'm looking at a list of them now. They all do come back to that problem of, well, you have. A paranoia about the government, you know, from chemtrails, black helicopters, all of this stuff kind of goes back to that. Well, if you don't believe the government, then everything is going to start unwinding. Anyway, I'm looking at this. I can't find any what I would describe as non. What about medical ones? See, I find those damaging, too.
See, no, those are good. Like gum stays in your system for 7 years.
Oh, OK. Let's go with that. Not about.
Seems pretty harmless.
Okay, good. Not about.
What are the medical ones?
Like inoculations causing? Oh, God, you know.
Yeah, bad.
Sure,
bad.
That's really bad.
Yeah, bad. Like, I mean, but I was just. I've been thinking about it a lot lately, and I've been like, why would someone be predisposed to like see these sort of real out there theories about stuff, and why would a person who is an otherwise lovely, charming, really good, decent human, why would that speak to them? And I think it is because of a desire to really understand the world. And there are things about the world that we'll probably in our lifetime never understand, and why people do what they do. And no, I think we have to just sort of be okay with that. But to try to find an answer, a neat answer, that involves like Hillary or whatever, that just that way lies madness, unfortunately.
Hey, I found a great non-dangerous
oh,
one.
Oh, good.
Yeah. The 1985 NBA draft. Before I read it, do you already know this one? Being a boy who would have been focusing on the NBA.
Guess, I am going to guess it probably has to do with Michael Jordan and Sam Bowie. Did it have to do with players being picked above Jordan?
Well, I don't know. I only have one sentence here on it, but Patrick Ewing is the name that comes up. The frozen envelope theory suggests that the NBA rigged its 1985 draft lottery so that Patrick Ewing would win the New York would join the New York Knicks. Theorists claim that a lottery envelope was chilled so that it could be identified by touch.
That's wonderful as far as conspiracy
right?
theories go.
Well, couldn't the why can't they all be like that? Yes.
That's so great. Oh my God. So the idea was that the NBA wanted Patrick Ewing was a dominant player at Georgetown, and for him to go to the New York Knicks, one of the premier media markets in America, that was, you know, they'd rather he go to the Knicks than say the Bucks. Peace and love to our Milwaukee listeners. But to chill the envelope. So does that mean that like that's the way the NBA lottery worked at that point? Was it was a bunch of envelopes, you pick one and you just get a name out of it.
A lot of times
they do it with ping pong balls now.
Do they?
I think they actually. Yeah, I believe. I want to say the NBA lottery is ping pong balls now.
Is that the most fun draft to watch on TV? I don't ever watch any drafts, so I don't really.
Yeah,
know.
I don't either. Because
everybody kind of like gives shit to the commissioner, right?
Well, if that happens in the NFL and the NBA now, because the commissioner comes out and announces with the third pick in the draft, the whatever, and it's just kind of become a fun thing to just boo the S out of the commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember right about the NBA draft, which I don't watch anymore, first of all, never watched it. Second of all, would not watch it now because Seattle doesn't have an NBA team anymore. But my memory of it is, if you are one of the teams that did very poorly the previous season, you're entered into this kind of lotto that decides something about how the first round is picked. Or that lottery involves, you get more balls in the lotto. You get more ping pong balls with your name on it, the worse you did. And so the idea is that the worst team will have the most chances at getting whatever this benefit is. And I think it's, again, they used to use the term lottery pick all the time for basketball players. So that indicates there was some kind of lottery. But then every once in a while, a team that didn't do all that bad. Like, I think actually every team – this is great. By the way, I'd like to thank our donors of the day. I think the way it is that every team in the NBA maybe gets – or every team that didn't go to the playoffs gets a ping pong ball. But then the worse you did, the more balls you get. And then sometimes what will happen is a team that really did okay, just had one scratcher in there, gets picked. And that's always kind of an interesting situation as well.
Can we both agree that if the topic of NBA draft ever comes up in our social circles, we will spread the rumor of the frozen envelope theory like unironically? I like a good lie.
I'm not only going to spread that, I'm starting new ones right now. One's called the sticky ping pong ball.
Oh, yeah. Well, there is another one here. What about the hot balls theory? You ready for this? A similar hot balls theory promoted by Scottish soccer coach David Moyes suggested that certain balls are used in draws for the UEFA competitions, and the balls have been warmed to achieve specific outcomes.
Well, there's a football one too, I think, not just Deflategate or whatever, but like I feel like there's some football ones about the how inflated the balls are or how slippery the balls are. Mm. And again, not related to Tom Brady, but just I remember like hearing at times about teams complaining that the home team was doing stuff to the ball kind of like that, like trying to make the ball extra slippery or the kicking balls, because they kick a different ball than they throw.
That's right.
The kicking balls being kind of messed with in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Didn't Aaron Rodgers complain about that famously after a defeat to the Seahawks, complaining that they gave him a kicking ball? I just remember winding up at the podium.
We finally got to the Aaron Rodgers portion of the show, which everyone knew was a matter of time.
Oh, if he's not a donor, is he? Oh, that would be so
amazing. If you were betting 29 and a half minutes was when we were going to mention Aaron Rodgers, you just won your office pool. Let's thank our donors of the day. These wonderful people are making the show possible because they donated during the most recent TBTL-a-thon. We're going to have another one of those coming up in the summertime, and we will once again just remind people, if they're new to the show or if they've forgotten, that this is a show that exists because of donations from the listeners. No donations, no show. No donations, no David Fulkin Jones impressions. No questionable theories about the NBA draft. No Andrew apologizing for forgetting that Dirty Projectors did that song. None of it would happen. It's like It's a Wonderful Life. You were never born. If you don't donate to this show, you were never born. Is that how that works?
I think it's similar. Can I do kind of an earnest pitch here for just 1 second?
Yes, please do.
Over time, I would say if you listen to the show, you've come to rely on our David Fulkin Jones imitations. But our David Fulkin Jones imitations rely on you. And that's why we always ask you to donate to the show to keep this type of programming available to you on demand whenever you want it. That's all.
Operators are standing by.
That is a Chris Farley. You slipped. I mean, listen.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not even putting it out there, so I'm not criticizing you, but there's just a dab of Down by the River in there.
Yeah.
There's also a dab of that in Alex Jones.
At least I steered clear of my usual Scottish Bill Clinton, which is where all of my impressions find themselves eventually.
Well, we're only 29 minutes in.
Yeah. Tyler Setter of Lawrence, Kansas. Rock Chalk Jayhawk, bud. Thank you for donating. Connie Bickerton of Bainbridge Island, Washington. You know what I'm realizing, Andrew, is I'm having a hard... Where I sit, let's say, I'm going to say, I probably sit 5 feet away from where I have the show sheet, right? Which is the rundown of the kind of stuff we're going to talk about in the donors of the day. I've probably been cutting and pasting the donors of the day in the same size of font for the last few years. And I realize that I am having a harder and harder time reading it. It's like an indication of my eyesight starting to diminish a little bit, which I've prided myself on. I've always had pretty good eyesight. What I know I don't have, and we should talk about this at some point on the reel, I'm definitely starting to have some radio headphone related hearing loss. When Carrie and I were on vacation, we'd be in a restaurant or we'd be at the pool or whatever, and there'd be like a song playing, and she'd go, "Oh, this is that Wilco song you like." Could not hear it.
Couldn't even tell that music was playing, or you couldn't identify.
Could tell
the music
was playing, but could not have identified the music. And then once she said, "It's that Wilco song," then I could, like, my mind started to fill in the blanks, and then I suddenly recognized it. But like in a loud restaurant or a loud room, I cannot pick out music like the way she can, like specifics of music. And then if she tells me what it is and I know the song, then it starts to make sense. But I don't pick it up in the din. And I feel like it's just got to be, you know, it's got to be wearing these headphones all the time.
Yeah. Mine has been going down for a while, maybe even before I was in this business. I think just from blasting.
Oh, really?
I mean, I used to just sit on the bus and just blast my headphones as loud as my Walkman. Literally, my Walkman would go. Yeah, I don't know. I just have these memories of listening to Nirvana's Nevermind at just top volume, just day in and day out on the bus, blasting it. I was always just thinking, like, why wouldn't you turn it all the way up? It's grunge. So, yeah, so I've been dealing with that for a while. I get really, like, the idea of talking to a young person in a crowded place is just straight up horrifying to me now, because it's just me saying, what? Huh? Talk more into the ear horn. It's real bad.
I know. I have to do that with Carrie because she just has a kind of a soft voice and a voice that gets really lost in the overall din of a room. And I'll say to her, like, I'm not mad at you. I'm just trying to put my ear closer to where you're talking because I have to look away. It's like that scene in Guffman.
Yeah.
I'm working on that, sort of trying to look away, but then back. So Connie Bickerton of Bainbridge Island, Washington, whose name and town of origin I can only barely read from here. Thank you for donating to the show. This is all a fundraiser to buy me a miracle ear, by the way. So give early, give often. Amy Heath of Dallas, Texas. And then Kenneth Ney of Ypsilanti, Michigan. You know Ken. Ken's a world-class Detroit Lions fan and probably a world-class, I would assume, Detroit Pistons fan as well. He's a sport guy. He probably knows all about the draft and how that works. He's been out. I think he was at the Austin show.
Oh.
We've seen him out at a variety of get-togethers. So, Kenneth, thank you so much for supporting the show. Also, Amy. Also, Connie. Also, Tyler. Thank you very much for making TBTL possible. We really mean it. We try to have some fun with these donor shout-outs, but please, please know that it is a really, really important thing, and it is a really meaningful thing to us to get to do this for our job. So thanks for making it possible. This episode is thanks to you, episode 2581 in a collector series. Blow that horn, Stan Fulkengetz.
That's the show title.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right, Top Story, one that has been presented to us by a number of listeners, including none other than the aforementioned Christopher Hayes. In fact, Carrie, my actual wife.
That's my wife.
While we were in Palm Springs, says, get a load of this. They had to emergency land a plane because of someone's farting. And I was like, that does not scan for me as a reason to land a plane. And then, of course, ultimately what it turned out to be was there was a fight on the plane. The origins of the fight supposedly were someone's flatulence. A Transavia Airlines pilot that's a discount Dutch airline, I believe. A Transavia Airlines pilot made an emergency landing after a fight broke out over another passenger's continued flatulence, according to multiple reports. The incident reportedly began after two passengers on the flight from Dubai to Amsterdam asked another passenger sitting next to them to stop passing gas, and they were ignored. The two men allegedly alerted the flight crew to the problem and did not receive the assistance they were looking for, which led to the altercation. The pilot reportedly asked the passengers to stop. After the altercation continued, the pilot decided to make an emergency landing at Vienna Airport, according to a British newspaper. In a statement, Transavia Airlines, just call it Transylvania, right? I mean, at this point, aren't you close enough?
Just lean in.
Transavia. Just lean into that. Transavia Airlines told the news outlet, our crew must ensure a safe flight. When passengers pose risks, they immediately intervene. Our people are trained for that. Yada, yada, yada. Press release from airline. So this is a funny story, but it is, as I suspected, really a story about a fight that happened on an airplane and the rumor that it may have started because of someone passing gas.
Yes, I am with you on that. And I will tell you my own personal history with this story, which is short and goes nowhere. I saw it posted everywhere, too. This
that
is one
should
of those
fit right in on this show, except for the part about it being short.
Right. I saw this all over the place, too, but I never click on it. Like, these types of ones, I don't click on until either they make it to a show sheet or maybe senior bidet correspondent Chris Hayes up-levels it. And I'm like, okay, I'll look at it. But
he upvoted it right up onto the show.
Right. So I agree with you that it's not necessarily fake news, because when I first read it, my brain just kind of turns off. My brain's like, probably not, probably more to it, or didn't happen. I can't explain it. My brain just passes over these types of headlines and dismisses them directly. But when you open this one and you give the explanation that you just gave, okay, yeah, the thing probably happened. Somebody at some point said, well, he was farting, and then that became the headline, right? Like, maybe
farted, maybe not. It's very possible that the It's very possible that the fight started because of crosswords that were maybe started with, like, you need to stop farting. I believe that there was farting on the plane.
Sure.
And I believe that it was probably what started a heated conversation. But that's probably happening in the skies even as we speak, just with the number of airplanes and number of people on. Although I've noticed that sometimes it just really depends on the airflow on a plane. Sometimes you can get away, you can sneak one out on a plane, and it isn't that noticiable.
You have to be careful.
But I've also noticed
you have to know your body, man. Yeah,
it's a dangerous game. I've also noticed that other people seem to also take the opportunity to fart on planes a lot.
So maybe not everybody else
behind you.
Yeah.
It's possible that because of the particular HVAC setup on an airplane, it just moves it behind you. I've had a couple times where I was like trapped and I was like, I got no choice on this one. And then I'm like pleasantly surprised that it doesn't seem to have been made a real impact on the overall vibe. But I think maybe what's happened is the air has whisked it away from me and presented it as a little gift to somebody else on the plane.
Okay, this is going to be gross, and it's also asking you a very personal question. And this is as gross as I'm going to get with this stuff, because then I'm going to back out of it again. But I think we've all been in a situation where we feel like we may need to pass a little gas, and it's not an ideal situation. We're not alone in a room. And so you make a little calculation, can I get away with this one? Can I get away with this one, meaning, will nobody hear it? Will nobody smell it? Will it just kind of just be one of those non-events? It was a non-event. But then there's another calculation that I think I maybe am guilty of making on a plane in maybe more dire circumstances, not on a regular basis, but saying, can I get away with this, i.e., people are going to know somebody farted, but they're not going to know it's me. You know, that's not a good way to live your life.
Yeah,
for a lot of
definitely,
reasons.
I'll say that's definitely plan C, maybe plan D.
Yeah.
Right? Because you know that the best case scenario, someone gets blamed for a thing you did, which is not the ideal.
Or nobody does. It's just this idea of, damn it, somebody did it, but nobody will ever know. We've wiped off all the prints.
Right. We're just all together at this Fish concert. And someone's just like someone in this crowd is having some problems.
I have a friend who, and I don't know that I remember when he told me this story, I was on the edge of my seat, although I don't remember many dazzling details and it's his story. But I have a friend who thought on an airplane that he was going to pass gas and something much bigger happened and he was stuck on the airplane.
Oof.
Yes. He wasn't even
sick.
That's
a real...
It just happened.
This is... Oh, yeah. Well, this is... And by the way, this is... I'd say about half as gross as I'm going to get with this story. So buckle up. It's kind of a joke. Like, I believe it's literally a joke in a trailer for one of the Wild Hogs movies.
Oh, really? On an airplane?
No. Not on an airplane. Oh. But I'm... It's... And maybe it's not. There's a whole genre now of movies about old guys who know they're old but still kick butt. And I feel like there's one, the Bucket List movies or something I feel like there's one franchise that has a lot of like Morgan Freeman and Jack Nicholson doing crazy things. And then there's one that has like Tim Allen and John Travolta. That's the
they
Wild
go to space,
one,
right? And one of them is like Wild Hogs in Space. Don't a bunch of old men go up in a rocket ship in one?
Maybe. Are you? Yeah. Anyway. Literally on one of those movies, the trailer, somebody says, one of the guys says something about, like, never trust a fart, which is a played for a punchline. But I heard that and I was like, that's sage life advice after a certain point.
Wait,
like,
did you read that in a Ziggy cartoon? Did Ziggy climb to the top of the mountain?
Yeah, you're staring at a sunset, just saying, never trust a fart. But that's real talk after a certain age. And I will say that I live my life differently at 41 than I probably did at 21. Like if I was on a plane and really anywhere on a plane, regardless of window or aisle, and I felt something coming on, what I would definitely do is get up and go use the restroom if I really needed to. That's the other difference between my life at 41 and my life at 21 is that if I have the slightest inkling of a situation, I don't roll the dice. I just go try to deal with it. Like which is different. I used to think, well, I can wait this out, or maybe this too shall pass. But now I'm like, I would be very nervous about rolling the dice on something north of a fart happening if I was on an airplane and I was letting one go. And your poor friend, that's just a terrible situation to be in. Back to this Transvania airline. I understand why the story got written up the way it did, because it certainly made the rounds internationally because of the fart component. But I'm not trying to say that was not part of the story, but it's not why the plane was landed, because that, to me, that would be a story. If somebody was farting and it was so pungent that the pilots could no longer safely operate the plane, I feel like you need to study that person. That person might be a superhero. Like, maybe there's something different about their body that we need to find out about, because they may have superpowers.
It's the spleen from Mystery Men. Isn't that Paul Rubens' character, the spleen?
It is. It feels good to laugh.
Yeah, or if you have pilots who can't fly a plane because of a preponderance of flatulation, then also maybe that's something they need to train pilots for, because it seems like it's not pleasant, and I feel you should be able to get through it.
Yeah, in the post 9/11 world we live in, I need pilots that can definitely fly with farting, if not more, going on the plane.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
We need to take it to a dark place.
Yeah, that would be an okay show title, but I feel like we already have.
I've already typed it in. I got to be honest with you. I mean, unless something huge happens, this show is going to be called Blow That Horn Stan Fulkin Gets.
A new study led by the University of California finds that drinking 2 glasses of beer or wine a day increases your chances by 18% of living into old age. Or I should say, you are less likely to experience a premature death. By the way, for comparison, participants who exercise 15 to 45 minutes a day cut the same risk of premature death by 11%. So in other words, if you had a couple of pops every day, and by that I mean drinks, I don't mean sodas. I remember we have listeners in the Midwest. They're like, oh, good.
Yeah.
I have 2 tabs every day. I have... What's the most random soda for me to bring up?
Fanta.
I have 2 Fantas every day. If you were to have a couple of alcohol drinks every day, you're lowering your risk of dying prematurely by 18%. And I believe, by the way, these were all people who had lived past the age of 90. It was 1,700 people, 1,700 non-agenarians enrolled in the 90-plus study. I believe, does non-agenarian mean that you have lived past 90?
I've never heard that term before. I'm looking it up as...
Only because if I type into my computer, it crashes.
Right. Let's see here. I want to hear it first.
Non-agenarian.
Non-agenarian is a person who is from 90 to 99 years old.
Non-agenarian.
Hold. So they studied 1,700 people who were over the age of 90. And they found the ones that were drinking a couple of glasses of beer or wine a day were 18% less likely to experience premature death. Meanwhile, participants who exercised, same risk was cut by 11%, meaning that the drinking of the alcohol seemed to actually have more of a benefit than the working out. Now, I'm not putting too much stock in that. I kind of think that I think it's hard to prove causality there, right? Because what you could also – I feel like there could be some other factors. For instance, if you're like really unhealthy, like you just don't feel well, you're probably not having a couple beers. So if you're somebody who's I'm wondering if the people who are capable of having a couple of cold ones at age 94, if that just spoke to a general overall health.
Right.
Like, you will sit out on the porch and you will get some sun and you will have a beer. That means you're doing pretty well at 94. If you're not doing pretty well, you probably won't be pursuing that, is one thing that I'm wondering about.
That makes a lot of sense. This is another one, and now it sounds like I'm just making fun of your show sheet, and I'm not. But this is another story we were scrambling on the Ron and Don show yesterday for a last-minute story, and the producer said, what about this one, this headline about, you know, drinking can prolong your life? I'm just like, that's just one of those things. Like, I pay attention to more stories that talk about why you can't trust stories. like this, you know, like especially these medical stories, there are just so many ins and outs, and usually what ends up happening is, you know, Hoda and Kathy Lee just, you know, read the press release, and then they talk about how they're going to have more wine with their chocolate, which is also going to extend their life. It's just all like there's just too many scientific factors going on for us to, I think, really take this too seriously.
Sure. I will say, though, that, you know, a lot of these stories are pretty questionable as far as the science or who did the research. This woman presented, her name is Claudia Cowis. She's a neurologist and presumably a very smart person who could, like, the little math I just did, like, well, were they just healthier people so they also were able to have beer? I think that'd be one of the things she would think about and control for. She was giving a presentation at the American Association for the Advancement of Science in Austin over the weekend. And here's what she said. I have no explanation for it, but I do firmly believe that modest drinking improves longevity. And I'm assuming that if she's a neurologist at the University of California and she's presenting at this is a pretty august scientific conference. I've weirdly been to that scientific conference, if you can believe that.
For covering something?
It was in – no, it was just in Seattle many years ago, and I was sent by someone to do some kind of like audio recording there. But – you know, get me drunk in a bar and I'll definitely let people know I've been to the American Association for the Advancement of Science conference. Anyway, I'm just saying, like, this is a smart person. This is a person who studies things. I think if there was a quick, ready answer that totally dismissed it, I don't think she would want to get up in front of her peers and present this. So I take that statement from her to mean something. Like, sir, that she definitely believes that there is some sort of beneficial effect to this. What stuck out at me, though, was actually the second part of this story, which is other factors that were found to boost longevity included weight. Participants who were slightly overweight but not obese cut their odds of an early death by 3%. It's not bad to be skinny when you're young, but it's very bad to be skinny when you're old, noted Cowis in her address. Now, that's hitting me where I live. I mean, seriously, like...
I don't know.
That seems to delight you.
Just something about that expression. Yeah.
Because as I bore the listeners on this show each day, I'm always kind of trying to think about my waistline and trying to stay sort of fit. I guess maybe I'm actually in the healthy range because I'm definitely not – like my BMI is not like how would you say? I am still – even though I don't think people would look at me and think I'm overweight, I am sort of technically overweight, if that makes any sense.
You're technically overweight. I'm technically obese. I just want to say that because I mentioned that on the show and some people are like, don't say you're obese. But no, I mean, I'm just saying there are very, you know, technical standards that you measure yourself by, and I know that I am in that range. And you are probably in the overweight range, although I look at you. You do not – actually, are you definitely right. still – by height and weight, are you sure?
Will you look something? Yes, I know I am because I have this fancy scale, and among other things, it tells me my BMI every time I weigh myself.
Okay,
so these are the things that the scale tells me.
Okay, so your weight.
You're a horrible person. No one will ever love you. No, it tells me the weather for the day. Oh. It tells me my weight. First thing, it tells me my weight. I step on it. It thinks about it for a minute. It says, here's the weight. Then it tells me if I'm trending up or down mm-hmm. with data points. It's cycling through a digital screen. Then it tells me what the weather is going to be. Like, hey, it's going to be sunny, but we're not going to see you in a bathing suit. And then it tells me my BMI, which I did not ask it to tell me. And my BMI right now is listed at about like 24... It's like somewhere between 24 and 25. And technically overweight, I think, starts at 23, if I remember right.
Okay.
So I am technically overweight. But I might actually be – I might be in the right range, they're saying here on this study, of a 3% improvement, which is you're carrying around a little extra weight, but you're not into a range where you're going to have weight-related medical issues.
Mm-hmm.
But I've kind of noted this just anecdotally that, like, definitely if you've known someone – as they've aged and as they've become older and more frail, that frailty is almost always seems to kind of be associated with weighing less and less and less. It does feel like you want to kind of, if you play it exactly right, you want to try to stay you know, I guess as fit as you can or whatever fitness level works for your body throughout your adult life. And then, I don't know, for me, if I make it to 80, it's like, then I just want to, now I just want to start packing on the pounds. Mm. I want to just start trying to like really fatten up for the next, say, 10 years of my existence. Because definitely having some meat on your bones is a helpful thing when you get into old age.
And also not counting donuts is a fun thing to do in your old age.
Oh my God. This is a reason I want to be 80 years old. I want to just eat donuts and drink beer. I mean, that sounds like I could really, really enjoy myself if that was my main goal each day.
I feel like I'm not claiming that we're young here, but isn't that always the false outlook of youth? You know, when I was a much younger man in high school or something, the idea of me being a 41-year-old man and even thinking, even caring about what my body would look like at 41 was ridiculous. I mean, this is dark and weird, but, you know, like, I didn't know if I would make it to 41 the way I envisioned what my crazy life was going to be like. And I think listeners of this show know it turned out to be pretty crazy. I did the dishes in under 2 minutes today while my tea was cooking. I was very excited about that. But I cook tea. So the idea of us sitting here at age 41 and thinking like, well, we're just going to be like, we're going to hit a certain age. We're going to be like, fuck it. Let's eat all the donuts and fart on planes. Well, and it's like, well, I don't know.
I know what you're saying. Like, my version of that was always when I was like 20, me and my buddy both kind of thought, actually, it was before that. It was like in high school. We were both like, are we getting receding hairlines? Which is hilarious to look back on because we didn't have receding hairlines. Or if we did, it was not something that was noticeable. But I was always like, am I, which is, it's funny to know that this is the kind of dumb stuff that I've been thinking about for way too long. But I remember thinking, if I just am like, I was like, I just want to be like, I want to just have hair on top of my head until I'm like 30. Because in my mind, it was like 30 was when people are old at 30. Like, if you meet a 30-year-old and they're like using a cane and they're totally bald and they're like sitting in a mansion saying Rosebud, like, that's what you do at 30.
Right.
You know, like, that was my idea of 30. I was like, at 30, I literally won't care anything about my life.
Yep.
And then you get to be 30 and you're like, well, no, that's not how I feel. And so, yes, you're right. Like, I think we all do that. Now, I will say the difference is that I'm not saying I won't care about my life at 80. I'm saying there will be a medical imperative that I need to make sure I'm getting kind of plump.
Yes. Well, that's true. Yeah. I mean, well,
so that's, it's not me not wanting to, it's not me thinking 80, who cares? It's me thinking 80, sweet. Now, like, I got doctor's orders that I need to put on a good 10, 15 pounds. Like, I can do that. I could do that at a taco time in an afternoon.
That's just a day's work. You know, I think there's a really good chance, depending how this TBTL-a-thon goes in the summer, that we'll still be doing this show when we're 80. So somebody just mark down the time code of this show. And then, you know, in some show in the future, episode number 10,491, I'll do the little harp sound and we'll flash back to this and then we can analyze it.
What do you think the show would sound like in our 80s? Like, first of all, how the show will be transmitted 40 years from now is, I'm not enough of a futurist to even have a concept of that. I assume it'll enter everyone's brain somehow. Like, people will just, they'll just think of TBTL. They'll be like, oh, they'll be walking through, they'll be like, oh yeah, let me check in on TBTL. And telepathically, it'll just start happening in their brain. Mm-hmm. So that's cool.
So that's kind of scary.
We'll be thanking our Bitcoin donors of the day. But, of course, Bitcoin will be hilariously antiquated. Bitcoin will be like Confederate money.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I mean, plane fart stories will be a thing of the past because we'll probably have figured out how to, like, dematerialize things and rematerialize them in other places. So air travel may not exist.
I just have a really strong feeling that whatever the technology is in this year, farting is still going to mess things up. Like, I still think that, like, we're going to have stories of people.
It'll be like a transporter station employee had to stop a transport midway because of people farting.
Oh my God. Seriously, though, don't you hate it when you go into a transporter and you think you're the only one in there and you fart, and then right before they beam you away, somebody walks in next to you. Like, oh my God. I
am, and you're like that. I am not the one who flarped. Oh, they're going to call it that in the future. It's all going to be based on us.
Well, I'm glad that we've had such an impact on the culture.
No, we're freaking heroes, dude. Like, we are like so much of just like galactic culture is based on stuff that we've done and said.
God, you know what? I am going to stick with this show, despite what I told you before we started rolling today.
Are you going to stick with the show if I tell you that I need you to activate the email sound effect since my computer has decided to really flarp the bed?
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
Oh, that's why it's so
all right, man.
Sorry, I'm having some...
What do we,
Whoa. There, I got it. I got it.
All right? Control.
Yeah, no, I'm leveling out the plane now. I had some weird settings on my computer that made that a little bit quieter, and then I tried to fix it.
I liked it. It was peaceful.
Let's see here. You know how sometimes people will, like, they feel compelled to write into us or call into us to tell us why they're going to stop listening to the show?
Yeah.
It always makes me wonder about that person's motivation. I've stopped listening to podcasts before. I've never written to a show to say I'm going to stop listening to a podcast.
I want to say one thing quickly in the defense of people that do that. I think it speaks to the really personal connection that a lot of people feel to this show. It doesn't mean that it's like the greatest way to handle it. I think in a way it's people feel, for whatever reason, very connected to us. And so when we say something that they don't agree with or when the show starts to somehow feel alienating to them, it can be a very intense feeling for people. It's not just like, you know, I tuned into some podcast and just not the show for me anymore. It's like, oh, my friends, I'm this friendship is ending. And so I sort of understand why people feel that. I take it ultimately as a bizarro sort of compliment, or at least a statement about how close people feel to us by virtue of listening to us on the show.
And it's not that often that it happens, but I was going through the voicemails today, and you know, Google Voice will kind of do its best job of trying to transcribe into you know, text what the voicemail says, so you can scan through it quickly. Well, this one, it looked like it started with a bad word, because that's also what Google Voice will do, is if it senses that there's a bad word, it'll just replace it with asterisks, which I always think is kind of funny that Google's trying to save me from that bad word that, like, somebody left on my voicemail. So this one starts with, like, hey, bleeps, or something along the lines of that. And then I could tell I've stopped listening to the show. And I'm just like, okay, buckle up, Walsh. Don't be triggered by this. But you know what? It was interesting. We've never gotten this one before. So without further ado, let's take a listen. This is from Jake.
Hello, gentlemen. It's Jake. Shoreline. I want to let you know that
Doesn't know what a hoi hoi is, by the way.
Right, hoi hoi was was what it beeped out.
Fine. I want to let you know that I have given up podcasts for the Christian practice of Lent,
And so for 40 days, I will not be listening to podcasts. I'm currently missing my witty banter from one Luke Burbank and one Andrew Walsh. So I'm not sure why I'm calling into that imaginary radio show. But I'm out walking my dog, and it's cold. And I hope you gentlemen are having a good evening. And power out!
So there you go. He gave up podcasting for Lent, which means he's never going to he's never going to hear that. Well, I guess he might go back and make up the 40 shows and 40 nights.
This is like giving up drinking for Lent, but you just walk into the bar and you're like, can I just smell that bourbon?
Can I smell your rag?
Can I smell your breath? Old rummy at the end of the bar. Thanks.
Yeah. Anyway, wow. Well, good luck,
that's
Jake.
That's very interesting to me, like, because that's an interesting thing to give up. I mean, I guess the idea of Lent is to give up, excuse me, give up something that's important to you. And sounds like, again, I'm just going to interpret everything as a compliment to us today. That's a compliment to us. That
yeah.
This podcast is so valuable that giving it up for Lent represents a personal sacrifice.
And, you know, it reminds me, like, I have not, you know, given anything up for Lent for a really, really long time. But I grew up in a very Catholic family. We took Lent very seriously. Stations of the Cross every Friday, often with me, like, actually doing the Stations of the Cross as an altar boy. They're fond memories. And, you know, we took Lent really seriously. And, you know, what Jake is saying reminds me that the real sacrifices are not when it's not a dual technology Lent giving up. In other words, giving up, well, for Lent, I'm going to give up salt. But really, it's kind of like, well, the doctor wants me to give up salt anyway.
Because right.
I'm, you know, got hypertension. Or I'm going to give up donuts. Well, you know, the good news is you get through Lent and you lose a few pounds, too. I don't know why I keep on bringing up donuts. I don't even eat that many donuts. But anyway, whatever it is. Whereas podcasts, well, I guess maybe arguably this one does, but for the most part, podcasts don't cause you any harm. You're just giving up something strictly because you believe that you need to make a sacrifice to kind of, you know, be in solidarity with, I guess, your God and your religion during this kind of dark period.
It's funny because what you've mentioned about donuts and other things is exactly why for years I was giving up booze for Lent, which actually I sort of have considered doing that this year. I know Lent's already underway. I guess I'm not strictly giving up booze, but I've been barely drinking, and I think I'm going to barely drink through Lent, which is, I know that's like being barely pregnant. But for me, it's always been when I have given up for Lent, it's 100% because I'm like, I need to like let my body recover. I want to drop a few pounds. You're right. It's always like, oh, Lent is a convenient way for me to do this thing that I already wanted to do. A true sacrifice is something like Jake's doing with podcasts, where it's like, you don't want to not be doing this, and it's not bad for you.
But you never...
And but you're doing it.
I'm asking you this, although it's going to sound like I'm telling you this, which is a real... That's how men talk. I always got the impression that you knew that. You were cognizant of that.
Oh, yeah.
You weren't like, because you did you give up Lent? Did you give up stuff for Lent when you were a kid? Like, that's a Catholic thing,
no.
Right?
Yeah, no. I don't have any religious connection with Lent. So maybe that is why, maybe it is a little different because you're talking about like observant Catholics who find something that they kind of probably should not be doing and then just dovetail it in with Lent. That's one way to do it, and that's probably not what Jake is doing. You're right. I'm coming at it from a completely non-religious standpoint, just as a kind of a good idea.
It's like, that is funny, though. I never thought about it in these terms, but people can, you know, either complain or comment on like kind of secular Christmas. You're one of the few people I know who celebrates secular Lent. Like, you don't really believe in the religion behind it.
I think there's more people that celebrate secular Lent than you might think.
Yeah?
Because I think that it's a good idea for all of us to think about our health and think about stuff we're doing that's maybe not super great for our physical bodies. I'm not talking strictly about alcohol or drugs or whatever, but it's like, I don't know. It's like, for me, I like this idea that there is like 2.5 months or something? I like this idea that, like, it's a kind of a way to say, hey, whatever it is that I know, smoking, whatever it is, like this not super great habit, I'm going to just chill out on it. And I know there's other people chilling out on their not super great habits all over the world. And somehow that makes me feel, first of all, the fact that there's an end to it is part of what is alluring about it. In other words, I'm not a person who wants to say, at least at this moment in my life, I'm never going to drink alcohol again. But I can be like, yeah, I'm going to chill on alcohol until May. Like that feels like a doable thing.
And if it's kind of like other people either in society or in your friend group all happen to be giving up something too, then, you know, there's kind of power in numbers when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that's why it has been sort of appealing to me. Now, the thing, though, that was not great about it was that, man, I would come Easter. I guess it's technically April when this is over. But like, which, you know, if I were an observant Catholic or even a mildly observant evangelical Christian, I would understand that the end of Lent is friggin' Jesus rises from the dead. But what was not great for me, and I want to apologize to any of our listeners who are also friends of mine who had to be around me on Easter, including you probably, during the period of time when I would give up booze for Lent. But man, I would come back in with a vengeance on Easter. And like, my body would be totally not ready for it because I hadn't had a drink in a long time. I usually would have dropped a few pounds, so I'd have even less resistance. And then it was just like, put on the seersucker suit, start drinking mimosas in the morning, and then just wake up 3 days later with someone telling me how the day went, which is not a good approach. That's not a good way to dip your toe back into those waters, let me just say.
I remember going to a casino with you guys one Easter. We had a nice Easter at your house. I had the best chicken I've ever eaten. Your brother made it, fried chicken. And then we went to a casino. But the rest is somewhat fuzzy. But I don't remember you making an ass of yourself, if that means anything. So there was at least one Easter.
That's good. I had one that I was literally like, and this is not due to any hallucinogens. I was cowering behind a slot machine, Hunter S. Thompson style.
Wow.
Like,
were you actually hiding from somebody?
I think sort of. I mean, maybe not a specific person. I used to have this habit where if I got to a certain level of being inebriated, I would kind of run. Like, I think it was that I didn't want to be, well, not to try to compare your life to mine or drag you into my world, but a little bit like how when we were at the gate the other night and you were like, gotta walk.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That moment where you're like, okay, I don't really want to be around a bunch of people right now because I'm not totally sure what I'm going to do. So I need to get a little distance so that I can just get this out of my system. Mm-hmm. I think that used to be a go-to for me because they would, I think Camaro Kev could tell you about this. I think there was a point where I would reliably ghost on the night. Because I would just get to a point and I'd just be like, I don't want to be around people. I need some fresh air. I might, you know, who knows what I'm going to do. And so I would just ghost. I think that was kind of like my standard operating procedure mm-hmm. for like a decent part of my 20s.
I definitely did. I definitely did my fair share of that. And I think we've talked about this before. I've ghosted at my own parties before. Genevieve and I would all sometimes, if it was like one of our really big ragers, this is probably more in the New Hampshire days, we'd have to kind of like keep an eye out to make sure that we weren't going to both ghost on our own party, you know, like it was one of those things where I don't know that we necessarily discussed it like a designated driver type of situation, but you realize after a while, if you haven't seen Genevieve, you're like, oh, I'm in this. I'm the one who's still awake for this, for however we're going to wrap up right. this Michigas.
So to recap, happy Lent, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Don't double ghost on your own party mm-hmm. and pace yourself. If you've given up the booze juice, like for instance, the listener, Jake, don't listen to like 35 podcasts on Easter.
No.
Because you don't know what's going to happen.
You'll find yourself hiding behind a podcast machine. I just want to read one more email. This was a really nice email we got from Andrea in Seattle. I don't know if this is self-aggrandizing, but this really made me happy. She is a new listener. You know why she started listening? Because she heard Andrew mention the podcast while ronning and donning it recently.
What?
It's always fun to listen to Cairo when you guys are Sean are filling in. Anyway, here's a food that I always really feel. Oh, you were talking about po' boys, right? Which was a very controversial thing. Because did you end up hearing that far into the Bean Show, where I actually read a letter from a food editor, an editor for a food issue of a magazine?
I did not hear that part of the show.
Went back and made the argument that they should be
actually... What was the ruling? I was dying to know.
Well, that person says that they should be poor boys. This is a this is somebody who lives in New Orleans, writes for maybe New Orleans Magazine. It was their food issue. He insisted that they were originally called poor boys, and then... And then here it got a little weird. He's kind of like, I don't know why they started taking off the O and the R. Probably sign painters trying to save money. And I'm like, eh, you lost me there, Lou Grant. That doesn't make sense. I'm sure it's just more of a dialect thing. So he kind of undermined his argument in my eyes. Anyway, here's a
also
food.
That, like,
oh, go ahead.
Yeah, because as the son of a sign painter, I would tell you, you don't get paid by the letter.
No, that
and also,
make any
sign
sense.
Painters aren't the ones that want to save money.
Right. So anyway, that part didn't make sense. So anyway, I was grasping at straws. Andrea says, here's a food that I always feel really weird about pronouncing correctly because everyone in the U.S. pronounces it wrong.
Ooh.
Crepes. In French, it rhymes with steps, but here everyone says it as if it rhymes with apes. So in French, it's crepes. Crepes. Here it's crepes. I've almost gaslit myself into thinking it should really be pronounced the wrong way, but that's on me, I guess. And that's Andrea in Seattle.
Wow.
Yeah, I guess I say crepes, but I also just kind of avoid crepes. I don't eat them. I don't talk about them.
And problem solved. What I would say to Andrea, I don't think Andrea's really asking for advice, but this is the kind of thing where it's like, you just know a little secret. But you should say crepes. Like, say crepes because to say crepes, even though it's correct, it makes you sound like Alex Trebek. And nobody likes Alex Trebek because of that.
Alex Trebek likes whole, Alex Trebek.
There are whole internet supercuts of him pronouncing things correctly but annoyingly. So say crepes, but in your mind just and in your heart know, like, I got a little secret. It's crepes.
Like, I do that with forte. I believe the correct pronunciation of forte is fort. That's my fort. But if you say that, yep. People are going to think you're dumb. I used to have that issue as a young man in Ohio, like in college, with the whole Ayn Rand thing. Because, you know, people be like, Ayn Rand? Her name's Anne. But anyway, I think we've lived.
I mean, what are the chances? What are the chances of somebody who read The Fountainhead having a kind of superior air about them where they'd want to correct someone over the pronunciation of Ayn Rand's name?
Nah,
I mean, that doesn't sound like a person who would ever exist.
No, not at all. All right, Stan.
What are we going to go out with?
Okay. Let's see here. What should we go out with? I don't know.
I'd take any Stan Folkengett song at this point. It's fine.
Blow that horn, Stan Folkengett. You know, I had now I'm doing exactly what you did. I'm so tempted to play you my music for my weekend, but it's only Wednesday, and I should probably. I still have Daryl Hall and John Oates up here from yesterday's Maneater Talks. Is there is there a song by them you would prefer?
Well, I love a lot of their songs, Maneater not being one of them. But what about You Make My Dreams Come True?
That sounds good to me. I got it right here.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be right back here with more Imaginary Radio for you tomorrow, so stay tuned. Until then, enjoy your Wednesday, and please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
flour out.